39. The Island Assault. Modo sat in a boat that was cutting silently through the waves. He shivered when he heard the cannon fire begin. They were approaching the opposite rocky cliffs of the island. Octavia put her hand on his shoulder. It was comforting to feel her touch at that moment. Each boom seemed to shake the island. It certainly shook his confidence. He'd heard smaller cannons before, but these ones sounded like hammers of the gods. The operation was underway, and there was no turning back. To his left and right were six other boats, each transporting Association soldiers and the fully armored dragoons, metal glinting in the moonlight. He was glad for his mask, so none of the other soldiers or Octavia would know how frightened he was. As for them, their grim faces seemed carved in stone. The soldiers were silent, but for the occasional hissed command. The boats were surprisingly silent, magically gliding along thanks to their electric engines. "A trick we stole from your friends in the Actinio," Mr. Socrates had explained. "Electric boats provide a swift, inaudible attack." With all the rifle fire and cannons going off at the docks, no one would hear the slight humming of the boats from such a distance away. As they approached, no alarms sounded on this side of the island. It seemed deserted above them. Had the attack on the docks drawn all the sentries to the battle? One could only hope. At the moment, his master would be back on the deck of the HMS Shah, watching the mission unfold through his spyglass. Tharpa would be at his side. Modo wished Tharpa were going into battle alongside him. Maybe he'd feel more confident. He patted himself to be sure his Colt pocket revolver was in its holster, and his knife still in its sheath. They glided right up to the rocky cliffs, fully 100 feet tall, slick with spray, unassailable by ordinary men. Even Modo, an expert and natural climber, wouldn't risk it. But given what he'd seen of the dragoons, he was fairly certain they could ascend the rocks with little difficulty. "Do you see any caves?" Octavia whispered. "Footman said they'd be on this side." "It's a big island." He squinted, wishing for a bit more moonlight. No cave that he could see. It was so dark it'd be difficult to find it. "The entrance is here somewhere," he said. "We just have to keep searching." Modo watched as the dragoons stood in their boats, reached up and found holds with their metal hands, then began to scale the cliffs. One by one, they climbed like insects. It was a glorious sight, seeing them move in perfect unison. Mr. Socrates had long ago spoken theoretically about soldiers in mechanized suits of armor, and now here they were, as promised, and about to strike the Clockwork Guild. Several stones hit the water, and they looked up to see that a dragoon was hanging by one arm, scrambling for another handhold. Moments later he plummeted and, without so much as a squawk, splashed into the ocean and sank. There was no rescue attempt, not even a pause in the operation. "Could it be Esther?" Octavia said. "Or Oppie?" "We won't know until later," Modo said, surprised at how steady his voice sounded. The lead dragoons were already reaching the summit. He expected them to be pushed back, but the last of them reached the top without incident. The cannons went on booming. Ropes were lowered and Sergeant Beatty and the remaining Association soldiers climbed up. "I do wish we were going with them," Modo said. "I don't much like crawling into holes." "I'm part sewer rat," Octavia said. "Anyway, we'd better find this cave quickly." She flicked on her pocket lucifer. "Put that out," Modo hissed. "If no one saw the dragoons, no one will notice us." Modo took out his own light and shone the beam on the rock walls. After a few minutes, he spotted a hole, barely large enough for a grown man. "There it is. You climb up first, since you're part monkey," Octavia said. He directed the sailor to maneuver the boat closer, then jumped up, grabbing at the lip of the cave. It took some effort, but he climbed in and lowered a short rope. Octavia was soon beside him, and they pulled out their compasses. They crouched and crab-walked their way deeper into the cave. At times, Modo had to squeeze his shoulders together to shove himself through narrow passages. Thankfully, the tunnel eventually widened. When he slipped and splashed into a pool of water, he kicked and found the floor, then carried on, pushing against the water, holding his pocket lucifer high. "It's deep," he said. "Be careful."
"Yes, sir,"
Octavia answered, splashing in behind him. It wasn't long before the map they'd memorized became useless. There were several fresh tunnels, which only seemed to confuse them both. In time they found themselves in a small chamber, surrounded by numerous openings. A smidgen of light could be seen at the end of a few of the tunnels. "This way," Octavia whispered, pointing at one of the partially lit openings. "Are you certain?"
"Yes."
They followed the tunnel to a dead end, where a ladder was fastened to the stone wall. The light source was somewhere above them. Modo climbed up first. Footman had warned them of the stench, but it was beyond anything Modo had imagined. A mix of carcasses and sulphur and other foul odors. The higher he climbed, the worse it stank. He was close to retching, so when he reached the top he covered his nose and mouth with one hand and helped Octavia up with the other. When she emerged, she took a deep breath, like she needed a gulp of fresh air. Modo wrinkled his nose in disgust.
"How can you stand the stench?" he asked.
"Oh, no worse than the cabbage soup the headmistress used to feed us every day,"
Octavia joked, but she looked pale. There was a sputtering lamp above them. The tunnel in front of them was partially collapsed, but his lucifer light revealed enough room for them to squeeze through. Octavia glanced at her compass.
"That tunnel goes west towards the beach. The cave that we're supposed to be entering is in that direction."
"Then let's take it, but we'll have to do it in the dark," he said.
They both put out their lights, but after a minute, Octavia flicked hers back on.
"This is madness, Modo. We could fall into a pit or be sucked into slime. I won't look good dead, Modo."
"That's for certain," he said glibly.
And then an image of Colette flashed through his mind, how she'd looked after her death. He didn't want to so much as imagine losing Octavia that way. He flicked on his light and led the way. With each step, the air grew colder, as though they were walking into winter. The stink was subsiding. When they reached a chamber lit by gaslight, he peeked around the corner. No one around, but along the wall were stacks of crates. Modo and Octavia crept into the room, shivering. Big square chunks of ice stuck out of a blanket of straw. The crates were labeled with Roman numerals.
"Do we dare look inside?"
Octavia asked.
"What would they keep at such a blood-numbing temperature?"
he wondered aloud, as he lifted the lid on a small crate. The wood creaked as Modo worked it back and forth till it finally popped off. He grimaced, and Octavia clutched her chest. There, looking up at them, were about 50 eyeballs, each neatly tucked into felt holders like they were eggs. They could only be human eyes, plucked out and waiting for...
for what?
He quickly closed the lid.
"Well, that's me done," he said. "I certainly don't intend to look in any more crates."
"I'm with you,"
Octavia said, her own eyes wide and uncertain. They crept out and along another tunnel. Once again, a putrid smell assaulted their noses. He paused at the entrance of the next chamber and motioned Octavia to stay still. He could hear shuffling, and when he peeked around the rock, he saw men in white coats setting down a crate. Then they got into a lift. One pressed a button, and they ascended silently. Modo cautiously entered the chamber. The room was humid, and he began to sweat, drops running down into his mask, his eyes burning. In the middle were two vast brass cauldrons boiling over a coal fire. Glass tubes led from one to the other, a blood-red substance inside. He peeked over the edge of a cauldron and saw a burbling red liquid with pinkish streaks. It smelled horrible.
"That's definitely worse than boiled cabbage," Octavia said.
"I can't imagine its purpose."
"Best not to."
A grating noise came from behind them. They turned to see the lift was on its way down and quickly hid behind a stack of barrels along the wall. A man stepped out of the lift, his back to them, and began to pick ice from the top of a barrel and crunch it in his mouth. Modo signaled to Octavia his intention, counted to three using his fingers, then leapt. She jumped at the same time. But as Modo flew through the air, the man pivoted, gave a glittering metal smile, and darted out of the way.
"Lime!"
He stopped some distance away and turned.
"So a couple of Alices have tumbled down the rabbit hole."
He drew long knives and waved them.
"I came down here to escape the booming booms. Boom, boom, boom. I'm not much of a military man. A little too noisy for my taste.
You're hiding, you mean? Modo said.
I'm being selectively brave. And thank you for making an appearance. I'm happy to have you to entertain me.
Modo triumphantly drew his pistol and was pleased to see Lyme stop smiling. Aiming to wound, he pulled the trigger. All he got in reply was a click of the hammer. He pulled it again and again. The gun was dripping water.
Ah, so grievously sad, Lyme said, taking a step towards them, twirling his blades. One, two, and through, the vorpal blade went snicker-snack.